Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play at Walt Disney World Resort.
Start clean with Clorox. Because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because...
I need the charcoal mask. Great, because why would I put that on my face when I could drop it in my sink?
This is what I get for multitasking. Ugh, why is charcoal so sticky?
Hello?
Hey, Janice. I am so sorry. I thought I was on mute. No, we don't need to reschedule. I'll just stay off camera.
Ooh, yeah, that happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed.
Hello, and welcome to the Summer of Best Ball with yours truly, Justin Herzig. It is August 2nd, and we are officially in football season. First preseason game, 2 days away. We're not going to get many starters, but should still be fun. Just great to get football back. Continuing on throughout the summer, I'll be hosting these Underdog Best Ball streams, bringing on some special guests. You can catch us every Tuesday, Thursday, live on the ETR channel, hosted in partnership with the Owners Club. Coming very soon, a new way to play best ball and fantasy football. Also, just want to give a heads up, let people know that everyone who signs up for the ETR Draft Kit Pro will get a free $10 on Underdog, comes with best ball rankings, content, season long, dynasty. Even if you already have the account, you can get that free $10, no strings attached. Once you get Draft Kit Pro, head over to the Underdog content hub on ETR that has a link to claim your $10. And if you're new to Underdog, promo code ETR will get you up to a $100 deposit bonus. And now, with us this afternoon, the king of hot takes ahead of the field on Taysom Hill this year, living that true virgin life by prioritizing best ball drafting over other honeymoon activities, cross-posting this show in the Sports Grid feed. You all know him from the Swolecast, the Taycast, the Gilcast, the NFT cast, the Top Shot cast. I don't know, all the casts. Mr. Davis Maddock, how are you doing today?
You know, I'm doing pretty good. Just grinding out as much expected value as possible before I get married and leave on my honeymoon. You know, it's like, I buy Bitcoin because the scarcest resource that we have in this planet is our time. And Bitcoin is the best way to protect that value. But I also grind $5 drafts with an expected value of 83 cents. So I'm a man of contradictions. Buddy.
Now, what point would the draft, like, what's the cheapest entry point that you'd be like, no, okay, I'm not playing that penny tournament?
I mean, for fast drafts, it would be $5, right? No way, anything. You know, if the Pomeranian was fast drafts only, I would have not entered any in that. But slow drafts, like, I don't care. Also, you know, you like the expected value calculation changes a little bit when you're in our line of work, because just being able to be like, I won tournament X. Is like I don't give a shit which puppy I win. I don't care. You know, it's like the expected value of being a best ball tournament winner in our line of work is pretty big.
I wouldn't know, but I'm hopeful that someday I will have that experience. No, completely fair. And I mean, and it is enjoyable. It's now not enjoyable enough that I may, do it on my honeymoon. I actually took my honeymoon 2 months ago, planned it in June where it wasn't going to be too crazy around best ball season, went to Italy where I couldn't enter any of them. And I did not do slow drafts.
But you didn't enter in any slows just to have something to click on.
I'm not a slow draft kind of guy. Well, other thing is Jamaica, like you're going to have internet, especially if you're at a resort. Like I had virtually no internet throughout Italy. So I did not want to be thinking about like, oh, am I going to have to link up? Like, yeah, that was, it was a blessing and not even disguise. It was just a blessing. It was the right decision. But middle of August, sitting on a beach, like that sounds like best ball drafting territory.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, look, you know, like this is, I think what a lot of people don't get is like the, like top five priorities in life, like two or three for me is the bag, like getting the bag, getting, generating independent wealth without working that hard, right? Because working that hard and, you know, building X, Y, or Z is one thing, but like, just would be pretty nice to just bank $1 million or $2 million. And the games are good right now. You know, that's one of the things is lots of people I think are still pretty bad at best ball and not approaching it in an optimal way. You know, I would just napkin math guess like 15% of the teams in Best Ball Mania 3 are just dead. Just like impossible of winning, you know, and that could be a combination of, oh, you messed up your queue and you got set on auto draft. You're not stacking. There's no week 17 correlation, you know, things like that. And so then you extrapolate that inside your drafts and you're like, well, then I'm getting some free advance rate. I'm picking up a lot of free expected value, stuff like that.
I agree. I think it's higher than 15%, to be honest.
I'm being kind.
That's okay. No, but even it's not like being offensive, but as you said, there's almost always an auto drafter or someone who's just, and sometimes it's me. You just didn't pay attention. You forgot whatever.
It's been me. I've been there.
That's 8% already. And then you throw in, there's probably 1 to 2 drafters who are either, you know, drunk, bad, not paying attention, like whatever it is. I completely agree. Okay. I'm going to get us in a Best Ball Mania draft. While we're doing that, let's go with chat's favorite segment. Now, first off, I will say my utmost, sincerest apologies and responsibility for not helping Evan Silva understand the game of two truths, one lie. That was, albeit entertaining. I probably should have explained the rules a little more, but I think Davis has got it. So we're going to bring this home. Davis, give us some two truths, one lie, and I'm going to get us in the best ball draft.
Well, you know, I am young enough to still remember this. Like, I've been in college, so I'm 29. So I was still in college 8 years ago. So I still, you know, syllabus day, I still kind of remember this. So I got one. Jalen Tolbert is a rookie wide receiver you will wish you had been drafting. Not necessarily Ja'Marr Chase levels, but maybe, let's say, Amon-Ra St. Brown levels for how, Liam bonked with Amon-Ra St. Brown last year. You should be random.orging between Jonathan Taylor and Christian McCaffrey when you get the 101 or the 102, you know, depending on when you have that selection available to you. And third, Taysom Hill will be on the $2 million winning underdog team. Those are my two truths and a lie.
I like them. All right, so we're starting off, we have Jalen Tolbert is the most valuable, is the must, is that wide receiver rookie that you wanted to own. We've got the RNG between CMC and JT, and we've got Taysom Hill. All right, what do you think, chat? I feel like if you're familiar with Davis's brand, if you've been paying attention to his content, I think we'll be able to get this one. Early votes in here, we have number two being the lie. We've got a couple guesses. We're still waiting on three people. I think I might have entered a little slow. Most of you guys jumped in the one before, but come on in. Waters are warm. And let's see. We got number two is the lie. Number two is the lie. We got Tolbert being the lie. CMC or bust. I'm on team CMC or bust. Obviously, it's not the Taysom Hill one. Davis, which one's the lie?
Yeah, it's number two. It is. You should definitely just be taking CMC. And there are actually, Tyler Lochner, I believe is his name. He actually explained this in a way I've been trying to get to this point all off season, but he explained it the best way, where the only reason CMC would not be number one is injury concern, right? That is the only thing in his profile, right? It's never mattered how bad the Panthers have been. They could be 0-17. He would still get his numbers. And he basically explained it this way, and it was brilliant, which is, if you're concerned about the injury at all, that's not the difference to move him from 101 to 102. That would make him like your 15th player or whatever. You know, if you think he's going to miss 10 games, you can't be considering him in the first round at all. When CMC is playing, he's going to be like in half point PPR, probably like 3.5-4 points better than every other player. Full point PPR, obviously more of a difference there, but like Jonathan Taylor got like 8 targets the last 6 games of the season for the Colts. And obviously Matt Ryan checks down a little bit more than Wentz. Maybe we see him more involved there, but CMC number one guy, not particularly close to me.
Looks like Jay Nade agrees. So I agree. I put out a tweet a few days ago on this that I am now on CMC, my number one overall on every site, all of that. All summer, I've also said that CMC is my overall number one guy, but I hadn't been drafting him. And so this is maybe where the RNG like thought maybe comes in. But at what point, I mean, when you're drafting all summer, are you comfortable just saying, I'm going to end up having 25%+ of CMC and 0 JT? That was my reason for drafting JT early on, so I could at least have that balance. What were your thoughts there?
I just checked. I have 21% Christian McCaffrey and 4% Jonathan Taylor, which basically means I've only ever taken Jonathan Taylor. Let's go Kelce here.
Okay,
right?
I'm good with that. Yep, I'm good with that.
So which means really I only ever take Jonathan Taylor in the very small, minute portion of drafts where Christian McCaffrey goes ahead of him and Jonathan Taylor's there. Now, I think you could random.org between JT and Kupp, right? Because I'm not even certain Kupp needs to be the number one wide receiver. It's just you obviously. With wide receivers, I think it's harder to feel extremely confident. Like, you're going to want some Kupp, you're going to want some Jefferson, you're going to want some Chase. I don't think there's any scenario where I would head into the season wanting, you know, uneven exposures of those three guys. I think they're all great.
Yeah, I mean, if you're taking CMC one, then, you know, okay, you know you're going to be overweight there. If you're them, you know, switching between JT and Kupp, for me, I'm thinking, okay, well, now you're either at pick two or three. If you're deciding between JT or Kupp, you're already getting some level of value. Maybe there's even a chance of getting some level of uniqueness because a late second falls.
Yeah,
that's where I'm like, okay, I'm not going to now ignore JT again just because I'm now getting some unique, a little time. It's weird, but like a little type of ADP value. But also, maybe that's your way you're actually getting some JT exposure and you're getting value to go with it.
Yeah. I mean, I just like, to me, Jonathan Taylor doesn't profile that much differently than like a Derrick Henry type, which is like I historically have, I mean, I've gotten the blade by fading Derrick Henry, obviously, but historically just not that in. I would go Swift here, I think. Okay. I'm on Swift over Mixon. What are your thoughts there? I know you grind those micro ADP edges even a little bit more than I do.
I do. I mean, like you can see here, I'm only 1% Swift, and I don't feel great about it. And I'm not really sure why it's so
that
low.
That feels horrible to me.
I think it is. I'm pretty big on. I don't think that DeAndre Swift is going to have that full role that puts him at the top of RB territory. I think Joe Mixon's not a better pick either. I think early on I was on Joe Mixon and just really slowed down lately. But for me, it's they haven't shown a willingness or a desire to go full DeAndre Swift. We even saw the quote yesterday that said, like, hey, you know, not comfortable giving him that full workload. Jamal Williams is still a perfectly adequate running back, and now they just brought in Justin Jackson. It's interesting because on DK, my DeAndre Swift ownership is like very high. Like I am strongly overweight. And so it might just be a structural thing where, you know, it's hard for him to reach that upside if he's not the goal line back. But no, it should not be at 1%. I'm fully on board with that.
So I think the arguments for Swift are very similar to like arguments for Kamara. Arguments for I don't think Swift is obviously I don't think anyone's this good, but Jamal Charles. Right. Like that type of guy where it's like, you know, one point like DeAndre Swift touches is worth like 1.4 Joe Mixon touches because he's so good when he gets the ball. Also, there is like a chance that the Lions are maybe not pathetic this year. You know, I mean, all these sports books have been tweeting that the over they've taken the most money on is the Lions. You know, our friend Eric Eager from PFF, you know, Restore the Roar, all of that. They spent money on their offensive line. They add DJ Shark. They draft Jameson Williams. Like, they just have a lot of competent offensive players. And obviously, I think we could all feel pretty stupid about thinking the Lions could be good with, like two injuries on offense for them makes them pretty bad pretty quickly. Because Goff is a distributor, not a creator. And if you take away some of the straws that stir the drink, I have more Jamal Williams than I do DeAndre Swift because I think you're right. I think it will be a timeshare, most likely. And Swift has to get their own efficiency.
Right. If he ends up with the highest fantasy points per touch out of any running back, that wouldn't shock me.
But yeah.
I also wouldn't be shocked if that's on 12 to 14 touches a game with six of those, like maybe, I don't know, 8 to 10 carries and 4 to 6 catches or something. I think that's where my concern is. Like, he probably has the highest floor out of anyone getting drafted near him, higher than Derrick Henry, higher than Najee Harris even. It was the upside. But I agree. 1% is too low for him. I will probably start working now more of him as I get the opportunity.
Yeah, and I like Mixon too, but Mixon, let's see, like what's the right, like Mixon just feels like whatever, like he'll be fine, you know, weeks where he scores 2 touchdowns, he'll be really good. And, you know, there's enough like little worries about there. I'm good with Moore or Waddle here. I don't care.
Okay. Let's go with Moore. I like Moore a little more, especially with the ADP value. I do really like James Conner. It's, I think just the wide receiver is the better play here. But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Structurally, the wide receiver is the better play.
And like my Connor is 15%. So you see, I've been drafting him, but it is.
He falls is why I'm overweight on him too. Cause he falls. Like sometimes you can get him, like the 401 or if you, if you get that rat pick. So I take Connor a lot as well.
I agree. And then like the Waddle, I'm willing to draft James Conner above Waddle because same reason, a lot of times when you're drafting him, it's near this turn area where you can still possibly get, like maybe you're drafting it here. You can take the James Conner and still get Waddle in the next round.
Yeah. I mean, I probably like Waddle more than the average person. I don't know. I would have to, I'm in a draft right now, so I can't pull up my exposures, but I do think one of the things that we are assuming is that Tyreek comes in and is immediately the mega alpha. But I mean, one, the history of like veteran wide receivers at age changing teams is not great. Two, I mean, he's dealt with lower body injuries now 2 years in a row. And Tua and Waddle, like Waddle is the more natural fit with the plays Tua wants to run anyway. Like I feel like Waddle could be kind of discounted. Like there are worlds where he outproduces Tyreek, I think.
Oh, 100%. Definitely agree with that. I think, honestly, it's the week 17 at New England that is killing his ADP. Now, I think he had a touchdown in both games against New England last year, small sample size, but at New England in December just feels gross. Well, look at that.
Yeah.
Easy choice.
See, that's why you and I both have a lot of him. And I assume you have a lot of Waller for the same reason, which is Waller falls. And you just, it's like every I'm taking Waller five spots after ADP every time, pretty much.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'll agree. My ADP though is a little above it. I think a lot of the reason why I'm getting him is because I didn't love the other wide receivers in that area around him. Like that's where it felt like there was a tier break where you're starting to reach. For like the Deontay, Judy, Sutton, and I liked Waller a little more from an upside, but I agree with you as well. This ADP has also fallen. He was in that 42 range for a lot, and that's why, as you said, you were snagging him five picks after. Well, it turns out that brings his ADP down.
Yeah. I mean, I like Waller for the same reasons I like Waddle. It's just that it's hard to integrate a new elite wide receiver. Although I guess everyone in Las Vegas are kind of learning this new offense and stuff at the same time, since it's all changing. And I don't think Adams is going to be bad, but
I think it's going to be such a highly, highly concentrated pass offense that all three are still going to be able to deliver value. And you're going to see weekly spikes if the team actually is as good as we expect.
So I'm working through all of my projections right now. I'm wondering your thoughts on these target shares. I got Devontae for 29%, which is actually lower than his career average, right? I mean, his career average in Green Bay last 4 years, it's 32% though is his career. Yeah. And I could see the Adams number being, this is just my first run. And I'm going to keep tweaking these. And I have Renfrow as the clear loser. I have him at 17% and Waller at 21%.
What was Renfrow and Waller last year?
Well, Waller was way down.
Yeah.
I don't have it pulled up ahead of me. Okay. I think if I remember correctly, Waller was like a 20% guy. And after there was some, I don't remember what the injury was, but then Renfrow got bumped up and was like 22% the rest of the season, I think.
Yeah. I think like I'd probably go more to like look at like, hey, what are the league norms? And it's really rare that we have a wide receiver playing a full season that's over 30%. Now Devontae Adams is also very rare. And but like had
was never playing with Darren Waller. Yeah.
Right. It had no target comp. I mean, Hunter Renfrow is the best number two that Devontae's played with in the past 3-4 years, like maybe since like Jordy or something.
Yeah.
Like when Devontae was arguably the number two. Yeah. So I think like high, I don't know, 29 is still really high. But like that 27 or something feels about right.
That's what because my stuff scales it. He's actually scaled to 27, 157 targets, 92 for Renfrow, 114 for Waller.
I could see that. I
mean, and
I
think that feels low for Renfrow, like instinctually, but then you have to put yourself in the position of like are Hunter Renfrow and Devontae Adams really going to be 30 targets separated? Like that would be, to me, that would be more bizarre than Renfrow taking a real backseat.
Right. And so, I mean, two things about this offense we also need to take into account is, so obviously their target share is not impacted by this, but the volume, the amount they're going to be passing, I think is quite high. So that should draw up the actual total numbers, because the division they're playing against and how often they're going to have to pass to stay in those games is, that's one of the reasons why I like just going, because those six games in division are going to be some fun.
And they have a great week 17 game as well.
Yeah. I think so. That defense in San Francisco can be tricky. And if they don't need, I agree. And then the second
we got someone took Mahomes on us. This was an early quarterback draft.
I mean, we haven't been talking about the people's drafts here, but yeah, the guy that was next to us, C.A. Patrick, T.J. Hockenson, followed by A.J. Dillon with the third, fourth.
This is what we're talking about. This is why I want to be sacrificing life EV by doing slow drafts on my honeymoon, because we just got the rake paid for us in this draft.
You think that would happen in a slow draft too, though?
Well, that's actually, grinders are probably more likely to be doing slow drafts, right?
I don't know. I think just you have more time, and like, I can't tell you like the amount of times I've been with people who are just like extremely casual, but they'll be like, "Hey, Justin, you know, underdog, who should I draft here?" And then like, they ask me a question with 6 hours left on the clock, and then 3 hours later, I hear them talking to another buddy asking the exact same question. Like, it's one, just pick it. And like, you can't go that wrong when you're literally just taking that much time asking all your friends all that.
I got breaking news here on the program.
Is this it?
Yes. Yeah. Per Danny Heifetz, 8 teammates, including Russell Wilson, are down on a knee around him, and he is on the cart. Leaving, Ben Albright says he's in pain, lower body, leg. So
should we take KJ Hamler?
No, we should take Chris Godwin though.
Yes. Thank you for saying that. I'm 100% agreement there.
Yeah. I'm actually having to make up for, being a little bit lighter on Godwin earlier in, like, I was still taking him some when Gage was steaming all the way up. Yeah, I got 11% Godwin. I mean, I wish that was higher.
Yeah, my Gage, love that. 1%.
Love that. Yeah, him. Absolutely, yes. Love that for you.
And for me with Godwin, I've been high on Godwin like this entire summer. But honestly, I was scared that if I was drafting him the last couple months, his ADP was just going to keep dropping. And my argument there was, all these rookies, all these guys around him are going to have great training camp. They're going to have highlights. They're going to move up. He's not going to play through training camp. You know, he's going to keep dropping. And that one report that came out, like him not being in the pop, that was like, shit, did I miss my chance? But I think it's still here, because I think most likely he still misses the first like few weeks of the season.
Yeah, I think that's likely true. When are we going to get draftable players in the sixth and seventh rounds of fantasy drafts? Like, at what point in the offseason is this going to become like, once Kyler's gone and you're staring at it's for me, it's when it goes Mooney, Thielen, Mitchell, Jacobs, Gibson. It's like, I don't fucking want any of these players. Like, literally not like, sometimes I'm reaching on Tony Pollard there. Not in the sixth round, in the seventh round. I know that goes against everything you believe in.
It's just a big reach for, I mean, it's just crazy when Pollard's going two rounds after Zeke. And it really is only like three or four, but you see it sometimes.
I mean, it doesn't actually make any sense. Like, one of those ADPs has to be so wrong, right? Like, and it's the odds suggest it or Pollard, but the 10% of the time where Pollard pays off, he's like probably finishing top five in fantasy points per game. So I'm not, same. I mean, the AJ Dillon thing, same thing. I think Kyler's fine here. Like I said, I take quarterback a lot here because this range is so bad. But Amon-Ra St. Brown is the last guy I get excited to take in round six. Then everyone else kind of stinks. Eli Moore.
Yeah, I agree. I've early on had a whole bunch of Lamar before he started really climbing. You can see I'm still pretty high on Kyler here, 18%. Also, stack partners with Kyler, you can still get Hopkins a little later. Sometimes he still drops. You can still grab Rondale Moore. I don't grab that much Zach Ertz. And then again, you don't need you don't need Kyler for a stack partners as well, just because of the way he can score points. So I'm liking how our team's coming together, though.
You've been hearing the drumbeat on Rondale?
Oh my gosh. I mean, I'm historically like anti, I don't want to say anti Rondale, but just like, I don't think it happens for Rondale. And for me, the argument has always been like, who is the comp for Rondale that like is his upside scenario? And the answer is Wandale Robinson.
Well, no, I mean, there have been guys of Rondale's archetype, like Randall Cobb, like Packers Randall Cobb.
So different in size.
I mean, size, but like player type. I mean, I know Rondale is small, but the NFL is also like, so when Randall Cobb was, when Randall Cobb was doing his thing, like we were at like a different layer. The ideal wide receiver one was a different size then. You know what I'm saying? Like NFL wide receivers have gotten smaller over the last 5 years, right? Ideal size used to be 6'2", 220. Now it's like 5'11", 190.
100% agree. 5'7", 180. We haven't seen anyone in the league succeed at that. And the closest are some of your like running back type that have that kind of gadget aspect. I think it was Pat Corain who said his comp is Jose Altuve. He literally had to go to baseball to get a comp. And his argument was that Altuve's size is such an outlier, and the fact that he was able to get to the major leagues means that he has whatever that special talent is to succeed, and he thinks Rondale has that as well. All this said, I'm still drafting him because if somehow this works out for him and they put him in a new role, it's money in the bank, and reports are positive.
Yeah. And I like Wandale too a lot. I just like to, I mean, the thing is, it's like, dude, like Rondale did it in the Big Ten. You know, he had like 14 and 200 against Ohio State. Like, I don't know. And I'm not that worried about him.
I'm going to try to just ask, what's my Tim Patrick? Yeah. Only 4%. I've been pretty off of him.
I think I was, I know I was drafting him some early. I bet I got more than, I got 7%. Yeah. Just because I love that game. But KJ Hamler, while we're here, is my most drafted player on underdogfantasy.com.
That was just a scary pick with the way reports were looking early on. But
what if I told you KJ Hamler is better than Jerry Jeudy?
I mean, Jerry Jeudy is healthier than KJ Hamler.
Not on the pup list, KJ Hamler.
I know. Hey, I'm on board, and you're getting him basically free in drafts right now.
Well, not anymore. He's going to be a 13th round pick by tomorrow morning. So we should take him here. We should take him here before the discount ends.
We really should. Well, I mean, there is someone that you've been podcasting with that says ADP doesn't matter.
Yeah. Oh, classic Soccer Dave. Just live a little, buddy. That's all you got to do. You just got to live a little.
We were joking on Twitter. He said he's a big fan of Raheem Mostert, and I asked him where we should draft him, and he goes, yeah, you know, depends on the draft, but third, fourth sounds right.
Yeah. Classic.
Paul, I think, yeah, Steve Smith is a very good one. He's still not as small, and I think he's a...
And he's not going to play... Rondale's not going to play like that. Like Steve Smith got down the field. Rondale, honestly, actually, I would say a great comp to the absolute nutcase for Rondale would be how Tyreek Hill played for the Chiefs last year after teams started playing the cover two against them, where they moved him around before the snap every single play, and he was catching the ball like behind blockers or against a linebacker and stuff like that. That's actually a great role for him.
Yep. I think the only difference with Tyreek is that he's probably a little better at elevating with his height and just kind of getting up.
Tyreek, there's not like a comp. Like Tyreek is like a unicorn NFL player.
But I agree. I think, yeah, Arizona needs to use him in more creative routes, get him in space, not catching the ball 5 yards behind the line of scrimmage every time.
He had the lowest average depth of target in the NFL last season by over 4 yards. He had like 1.8 ADOT, and then Cole Beasley was like 5 or like 5.3 or something.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting spot here.
Yeah. See, this is the seventh round. It's like that's why I'm taking Pollard. That's why I wouldn't take Treylon Burks here because it's too far ahead of ADP. But I would take Pollard here because I just want to have Tony Pollard. Like every pick here sucks. Like literally every pick here sucks.
I agree. I often go Miles Sanders over Pollard.
I knew you would be a Miles Sanders bro. But only grinders draft Miles Sanders.
I'm 12% Pollard and I'm 5% Sanders. So I'm not saying it's that often. But yeah, I don't know. Pollard just, you got to go with that upside play. And I think he fits well with our build that we're talking about right now. That doesn't have any correlation. I don't like that aspect because usually when I get Dallas, it's pretty easy. You know,
well,
we'll see. We'll see. What
we got five picks to sweat Treylon Burks.
Yeah, I mean, but like Treylon Burks is a horrible pick. Like no one should be drafting him.
Yeah,
the only reason
he's got asthma. Imagine
because he's playing against Dallas in week 17.
Imagine taking any player with asthma. It's terrible.
What's your Ayuk thought? Josh Norris gave me kind of crap when he saw that I posted. I only have 4% of Brandon Ayuk.
What if Brandon Ayuk is Deebo Samuel for the San Francisco 49ers? It's really not nearly as absurd as it sounds because this is actually true. Go back and look it up. Ayuk's first NFL touchdown was a rushing touchdown. Physically, he and Deebo, very similar. They just gave Deebo all this massive money. And I'm actually curious your take on this. So clearly Debo's representation just wanted a win in this negotiation with the 49ers. And one of the ways they got that win was rushing incentives, which, Burks for sure. So one of my buddies in real life mentioned this to me, which was, and he's a lawyer, so it's just kind of how his brain works. And he was like, what if his representation just asked for massive rushing incentives to ensure the 49ers don't use him that way? Now, obviously,
it's not massive.
It's not massive at all. It's like, mm-hmm. They get maxed out at $635,000 a year. But I think that is a clear indication Deebo does not want to play that role. He would much prefer, I think, to play the 2020 role, right?
How many NFL players, offensive players, are like, no, I don't want the ball in my hands.
This is all real galaxy brain stuff. But at the end of the day, I just think Brandon Ayuk is really good, and I think that it's very hard to have an offense where you're really only giving the ball to one dude. And I think there should be enough meat on the bone for it's like Kittle only pays off in spikes. Like there are going to be a lot of weeks Kittle has 2 for 20. But I like Ayuk is really long story short.
I'd be curious if you haven't, when you do, but San Francisco, what you end up having both Lance's rushing totals as well as passing totals.
I'm putting off doing San Francisco. They're literally the last team I'm going to do. I'm through like 90% of the league. And I have San Francisco left to do, and I have Tampa Bay left to do because I just like, I don't know. It's those teams are so hard.
And you know what? Agree. Like Alex, ambiguity is our friend in these situations. We don't know. Also, I believe that Trey Lance is not a great passing quarterback.
Totally plays into this. Yes.
Kittle last year, when Jimmy threw him a dime in practice, he made a very sly comment about, like, you know, praising that comparative to Trey Lance. You could tell he had frustration with Trey Lance in practices and stuff. They didn't have confidence in him last year. I do believe it's the right move to have him play this entire year. I think from a fantasy, Trey Lance is a great asset. I just don't think he's going to be throwing that often in that offense. And that's what scares me about Kittle, about Ayuk, about Deebo, about everyone. Deebo at least like finds lots of ways to make value. But I think that's my scare.
Well, if you want to go off the beaten path down to Narrative Street, Ayuk has been Lance's biggest champion in the locker room, per reports. Ayuk has been taking on I forget the exact wording. One of the Athletic guys tweeted this out the other day that Ayuk is like kind of being like the cheerleader for Lance, basically. Yeah.
Brandon Ayuk, the hype man. No, I could see that. I mean, hey, when you've got a guy who's struggling to stay on the field himself, always good. They did have good times together at the beginning of last season on the bench, right?
That's when Brandon Ayuk was playing behind River Crackcraft.
It is not a talent thing with Ayuk. I think that's one thing to be clear of. I think he's a very good wide receiver. It is the Tim Patrick news is just so sad.
If you want to look on the bright side, though, he did just get paid and I believe was an undrafted free agent, I think, Tim Patrick, and did secure a decent size contract from the Broncos this offseason.
He got a fantastic bag for a wide receiver 3 or 4 on a team. No, 100%.
Wow, he is already 28 years old. I would have gotten that one wrong.
That feels, I mean, he's been in the league, I would have guessed he's been in the league about 4 years.
Yeah.
He probably played through his rookie contract and then got that new one, but he came in the league late. Yeah, I didn't know he came in so late, though. Velus Jones style. Okay. Well, quick refresher because we're two picks away. We've got Kyler.
Your queue is messing me up. I refuse to draft by rankings.
So I wouldn't say I draft by rankings, but I have rankings. And yeah. This just helps me. And so like when I'm running back, I had my ADP and stuff. I see, and I'm, you have such familiarity. Like Singletary feels like decent value here for looking at running back. Wide receiver is a bit of a drop.
We gotta take Rondale here because I think there is likely to be
105. Our next pick's 112. That's five before ADP.
All right. I mean, we're drafting on stream though.
Nobody likes Rondale. Have you heard how much I've been shitting on Rondale Moore?
Yeah, I like Devin Singletary. I think he is. I think it's like a classic over. Like, is there anything that is more overrated in fantasy football year after year than running backs who go
running back?
Well, not first round running backs, but right. Running backs who go on day two of the NFL draft are consistently the most overrated asset in fantasy football. Like, I mean, literally, how many like Keyshawn Vaughns have we lived through in our lives? We're like, oh my god, he's gonna be the guy, and then he plays like six snaps all year.
Yep. Yeah, and who is it? Eric here. That wasn't Eric. Sorry, Eric. Here we go. Oh. Drew, obviously. I was going to try to give someone in chat credit, and then I realized it was actually Dink who said it, so I'm sorry. No, but that was a good point. We could have gone CPAT over Singletary for the Week 17 correlation with Arizona. May have been the right. That value, though, in Devin Singletary is hard to pass up. I feel like he's usually going pretty high, but decent call. Good call, Dink. All right. We know if Rondale falls, we got to go with him.
We should have taken Patterson Rondale.
Yeah. No, I agree. Patterson probably should have been there. Just didn't consider that one. That's the downside of you make mistakes. Okay. Running backs wise, do you feel good about these four running backs? Maybe grab like a very late fifth one.
Yeah, we'll take a McKinnon, a Raheem Mostert, a Sony Michel, something like that. But yeah, we're mostly good there.
I agree with two out of three of those names. We can discuss Michelle later.
Mostert and Michelle are the same bet. It's like Mostert wins because he plays well. Michelle wins because Edmonds and Mostert play poorly.
Agreed. Okay. There we go.
Rondale.
All right. So we've got a little stack partner here. We got the Kyler, the James Connor, and the Rondale. Not too bad. But yeah, I think where we're sitting right now, QB will probably only grab one more. Tight end will definitely grab one more. I could see us going with a five running back, nine wide receiver.
I almost, and you're going to tell me this is bad, I almost always take three at one of the onesie positions. QB. Even if I take Kelsey and Mahomes, or even if I take Lamar and Mark Andrews or whatever, and there are like a lot of reasons for that. I mean, and this is again, I mean, the data would back this up in a way, like adding the third guy does generally add at least some small amount of points to your team over the course of the season. But, and you probably don't sweat these in season that much. And I guess I didn't a ton last year, but clicking on a team that you're like, oh shit, I'm in first place of 37 of my 150s. And then you click on your team with the most points and you're like, oh, I don't have a quarterback this week, or oh, I don't have a tight end this week, or what? I mean, that is like, and that is very fear-based decision making. Everyone involved in science would tell you it's wrong, but I just like taking. I just like the nice warm security blanket of the third onesie.
Do you make your Thursday golf lineups by earliest tee time?
Yeah, I love the screenshot. No, it's and it's like also. Well, also one of you do probably know this, is that, we're still so early in figuring out best ball, is that people will look at the same problem the same way and use the data in a different way and get a different answer, right? Like some people will be like, actually week 16 has the highest EV because just having a ticket in the final has an EV of X, Y, or Z or whatever. So like,
I agree with you. My take is three QBs in many situations, not all, in most situations will increase your advance rate. I do think, though, it does hurt you in most situations for advancing in the playoffs and especially week 17. However, I do look for, okay, let's look at this team and which three QBs could make sense. We do have Kyler. Would it make sense to maybe grab a Baker and a Tannehill together? Like, I could see that being a solid three QB team.
Yeah. The reason why I have done a lot of three tight end builds is because of the Taysom thing, because I just want to have a lot of him, and he makes sense as a third tight end because it doesn't matter if he goes a lot of weeks without scoring for you, if you get a couple random 22 burgers or whatever. But I think this team is better structured for three quarterbacks, especially because Kyler is like a lock to miss two games every single year.
We can get into the Taysom one. I think it's interesting we start with Kelce because Taysom is a decent fit here.
The Kelce Taysom pairing fits like an absolute glove, because then the Taysom points are only ever counting for you when he smashes, right?
Yeah. Okay. We are pretty much in. We just need to go hammer time on wide receivers, especially if we're thinking like we're leaning three QBs.
A lot of guys I like here, wide receiver. Okay.
Josh Palmer would have been my top choice there. So he went. Jahan Dotson is probably my next favorite, especially Curtis Samuel reports.
I like Jacoby Myers, but I can't tell where we're at ADP wise right now.
Myers just went play before.
He just went. Before. I like Shark too, but we're ahead of ADP. I don't care. Dotson's fine.
Okay. Landry, Parker, or ADP top. Do you feel anything about that?
No Devontae Parker. I don't want any of that.
Yeah. You could look at my Devontae. This is pretty interesting. 153 versus 133 on Devontae. Like,
yeah,
he's been climbing slash, I guess I was only drafting him very late early. So for me, Dotson, it's the range of outcomes. Any kind of rookie, still a first round wide receiver, very possibly could be like, the target hog in that offense in parallel with Terry McLaurin. And with Curtis Samuel reports not being great in camp, it makes me want to draft him even more.
Yeah. We're going to have to take Tolbert in the next round, probably. How high is he going since the James Washington thing?
I mean, that just happened. He's 131 right here. Oh, he already went. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see where he went. He went 121.
That seems about right.
Yeah, ahead of Galladay makes sense with the Galladay news that's coming out. I definitely wouldn't take him above like Rondale Moore, Tyler Boyd. I think that's about right near Galladay. God, I'm hoping that Will Fuller signs there. That would be amazing.
I mean, we finally got a report yesterday that at least indicates his agent still cares. Right. Because we got the, what was it? It's just like, that was the first news item to digest on Will Fuller that we gotten since he posted that picture of his finger on Instagram.
Yeah. All right. Probably another wide receiver here. I'm just going to take a look at other positions just in case. Nothing here that really jumps out at us at QB. Tight end, no crazy value falling. Running back, I think we keep waiting. Who's your pick of choice here?
I like Shark the most, but we're still 20 spots ahead of ADP here. I would just take whatever wide receiver is closest at ADP, probably.
Let's go Landry. I do like the Landry situation. Underhill and one of in his recent pod, not Underhill's right. Yeah, Underhill in the podcast with Evan and Adam was talking about he could see Landry being the go-to guy for Winston. And so, Landry has been a great wide receiver. I don't think he's complete dust yet. I'm okay with taking that chance there.
Yeah, he's pretty dusty and is unlikely to be – like, I think he's probably like a not great ceiling spike week 17 play, but probably a pretty good advance rate guy. Like, assuming he doesn't get injured, assuming he doesn't get injured and Mike Thomas is still not 100%, which it would be weird if he was still 100% Mike Thomas, given he hasn't played football in 2 years, he will probably just like walk into like 700 yards and 4 touchdowns.
The other is I was trying to set you up. Like, I know the T-ball is like, it's hard virtually, but I was like, what if in week 17,
the Taysom Landry correlation. I unironically have done a AJ Brown, Hurts, Olave, Taysom grouping a couple times.
When you can get two QB stacks and you can start all four of them in a game, like, yeah. All right, now I'm going to give my Taysom take. I think, so when Dalton signed as the backup there, that's when I decided I wasn't going to draft much Taysom because I think it is extremely unlikely that he is ever going to be their starting QB, barring Correct. Injuries to both of them.
Yeah.
That meaning he's not going to have 20, he's highly unlikely to have 20 plus games in my mind. Then a week ago, we get a week and a half ago, we get the report that he's still going to have some QB play. Now in my mind, I still don't think he has that upside of being a starting QB. But
he's got like he's got like 14 point upside now.
Agreed. And for a last round QB, last round tight end, I'm on board.
Which was really the crux of my argument the entire time. Like which was not that he was ever going to leapfrog Andy Dalton, but that because if you I think there's this temptation to treat the Saints like they're this whole new organization. Everyone just got promoted one rung. That's all that happened, right? Sean Payton leaves the building. The OC stays the same. The quarterback's coach stays the same. Tight end coach stays the same. They just promoted the DC to the head coach. Like, I don't think they're going to be reinventing the wheel. And the other argument that I don't think is actually going to come to pass is that if Kamara misses any time, there will be an increased reliance on the very stupid. Like, I don't love watching Taysom Hill. I've never been a Taysom guy. Like I'm not big T out here, you know, wanting the Taysom touchdowns or whatever, but I just find it such an interesting game theory wrinkle. And honestly, I wish they would have just made him a quarterback so I didn't have to think about it.
Yeah. I'm apparently the one to blame for that. So, my apologies, but I think it's better for the game. Cause I mean, it was a fun conversation with Redman and stuff on Twitter. It's just like, hey, if we want to have fun, if we want game theory, like if you want to make it an actual decision, then make him a tight end. Cause if he's a QB anywhere else, he's just irrelevant. You get your Chark. I honestly was hoping Robbie Anderson was going to fall because get a little more of that Carolina future stack we're building. But
yeah, I don't like Robbie Anderson at all. I was taking him when he was. I actually was looking at buying for Spike Week tools the other day. I did all my imports and everything. Mm-hmm. Robbie Anderson is the guy I have the biggest value on because he's risen up like 50 spots or whatever. Mm-hmm. But Robbie Anderson. Just seemed bad last year, even outside of like the quarterback play. Like he just seemed to have a harder time getting open. He had 4.7 yards per. I mean, he was the ultimate empty calories guy.
But he earned a ton of targets. He did. So maybe a better quarterback. Like in the, he's still.
But he earned a ton of targets playing with Tommy Tremble and Shai Smith and Ian Agreed. Thomas. It's like I don't know. I could be wrong there. It's like
Is it any better?
That's true. Well, that's the thing is that'll be a big difference. But I like taking him when he was cheap, and now I like tough scene, Tim Patrick auto draft.
There he is.
So I liked taking him when he was an 18th round pick. That was a really good spot for him. But I wonder your philosophy on this too. Generally speaking, when there's a guy I like to take and then they get more expensive, a lot of the times I back off.
I mean, here's the classic example for this year right now. Julio, I'm at 14%, ADP of 194. Like, no chance I'm drafting him near this, especially when we're 45% of the way into BBM. Robbie Anderson, I don't think that climb was that high. I mean, he was probably around like 170, once like ADP. And so I took him a ton before the Baker, then kept going. I've slowed down probably a little, but also I've been very heavy on the Tampa Bay Carolina game for week 17. And so he's a great stack partner getting the comeback.
Yeah.
And then
I've actually been having this go the other way on me where there's been enough Dulcich drumbeat that Albert O has been falling. So it's like, I just get to take Albert O every draft now, pretty much.
Yeah. Okay. If we're still sticking with QB tight end, like, all right. We could grab that fifth running back with a Khalil Herbert, wide receiver, Jameson. Oh, it's a little reach on Wandale, but he has been jumping up the ADP. There's the Crowder,
you don't got to ask me twice about Wandale. We get Wandale and Rondale. I think that's good enough to win us $2 million.
I love this. I'm going to go back to Aaron's comment. Yeah, just don't calculate this team's average depth of target. Wandale may not be helping that.
This is full PPR, right? It's fine.
I mean, I don't think Underdog's going to change up the rules on that. But did you hear that alpha that was dropped during our spaces yesterday?
Mm-mm. Oh, 15 second play clock. Yeah,
that'll be 15 seconds, but faster play clock.
I mean, I would do 10 second clock. Honestly, that would be amazing. I could knock out like six at a time in 30 minutes on the Stairmaster. That would be, in my perfect world, that would be unreal.
I think it's a win-win for everyone. Underdog's going to have more people being able to draft more. They're going to be able to get through their, you know, more drafts in general for people that want to do the 15 second. Like, it just creates I don't want to have to take 45 minutes to do a draft. Grinding two 10 second or two 15 seconds at the same time. Oh, also, if you do two auto drafts, it's going to go on auto pick.
Well, that's how DraftKings works. And yeah. It greatly increases the speed because there's also even that little Underdog definitely gives you like a buffer. Like you
have a 3 second, Yeah.
Yeah. So which I can do a 20 round DraftKings draft almost faster than an 18 round Underdog draft.
Drafters as well. I feel like drafters, like my picks, like it's like two, and like when it goes one, it's like gone. Yeah.
Yeah.
One thing I was trying to get Underdog to do, and they said they tried, but it was just too hard for technical, is if I have a player in my queue, don't put me on auto pick, because that means I'm still active in the draft and I'm just like, you know, making a decision. Sure. We just got to be careful on the terms to make sure that like your first one isn't another auto pick from the time before from a queue. And yeah.
Yeah. I wish that the queue would auto order itself by ADP instead of the order by which you put them in there. Because what happens to me is, so I take Travis Kelce, I star every Chief and I star every Bronco. Then I take DeAndre Swift and I star every Lion and I star every Brown. But if it falls in such a way, I might be on the clock in the 10th round and every Chief is gone. The only one that's left is Jerick McKinnon, and I time out and I get 10th round, you know, Jerick McKinnon, right? Which stinks.
I hear you. Okay. In this situation, I like to say, hey, rather than go 16, 17, 18, I'm going to reach a little, and we're probably reaching on every pick for the next three rounds. But
because it's more important to get our correlations than it is to eke out eight spots of round 16 value.
And I'd rather have an 18th for a guy that's not being drafted to get me that uniqueness. Agreed.
Yeah. Yeah. Did Goff get picked already?
Oh, no. So Goff is still here. And we know.
I meant Daniel Jones, but he did.
Yes. But we do have this DJ Chark, DeAndre Swift. So Goff probably moves up and becomes our.
Yeah. I like Goff a lot as a second quarterback when you get a good quarterback.
Is there any argument that we should be going with an Evan Ingram here over a Taysom Hill?
Is it? I mean, if it's 2019, Evan Ingram could. I mean, I always have thought Evan Ingram is kind of good, but he just is one of the most mismanaged players. Like he was, yeah. I don't know. It's like Jason Garrett came in and turned him into Jason Witten.
So here's my thought: is if you go Evan Ingram here, we'll be able to get one of our QBs here. And then we're hoping that, and we probably end up with Baker here. If we want to go Tannehill Goff, which I probably like better than Baker, we probably take them in these two and then go for that last tight end later.
That works for me.
Okay. I'm thinking Tannehill before Goff because I don't believe any of these people are going to be wanting to grab Goff. Brady, Stafford, Rodgers, Tua. I can't think of the Detroit
players. I feel less confident that Tannehill has 16 games in him than Goff, though. Like, I think his weekly fantasy points per game will. I mean, it doesn't really matter. It's fine. Yeah, Tannehill's fine. But I just feel there are way more seasons where Tannehill doesn't play the last three games than Goff, just because they could stink. You know, they purposely took a step back, trading away AJ Brown. Like a season where Derrick Henry gets injured, the defense stinks again. You know, Tannehill turns the ball over a ton. Wow, you get the stream snipers. It happens. Mm-hmm. What can you do?
All right, now this leaves us with an interesting decision then, because now tight end starts getting pretty ugly, does it make more sense for us to grab Ingram here?
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah.
I don't mind. I mean, the thing is, like, Hooper, I don't mind either. Maybe we go Hooper for the correlation instead of Ingram.
No, Austin Hooper is not a sexy pick.
And Evan Ingram is?
Evan Ingram still has the small sprinkling of you can convince yourself he's got upside, right?
How much are you valuing correlation here?
Yeah, let's take Hooper because we have Pollard as well. So this is the
Derrick Henry goes hurt and gets hurt. And
the Titans do have that going for them where like any season where Derrick Henry gets hurt, they're just going to be so pass heavy.
Tannehill, Traylon, Hooper, like, yeah. And because we have both of these are legitimate stack partners for us, Goff's going to be a little past ADP. Baker's right at it. I think we should be able to get one of these two. And honestly, in a worst case scenario, Kyler Tannehill isn't the worst 2 QB team.
No, it's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's we did okay. It's a fine team. No, I don't know. It's not the best team I've drafted, but not the worst team I've drafted either. So that's fine.
I think that's fair. I mean, you're just getting a little upset that we lost Taysom, but I get it. All right, you did some great farming the other day. What'd you learn for round 18 picks?
You want to know the weirdest one that came up a bunch of times that like I literally would have never gotten to this guy in. I could have done a million drafts. I think. People are really on this Mateo Durant guy for the Steelers.
Never would have got there.
Never would have got there. But I was thinking about it, and I was like, is this bad or does it make sense? And I realized that the Steelers' backfield is actually kind of akin to the Chargers' backfield in the sense that they have spent a lot of resources trying to find a second running back for, like, years, ever since James Conner got promoted from backup to starter. So we've got Jalen Samuels, Anthony McFarland, Kalen Ballage. There was another guy in there. Tony Brooks James. I don't know anything about this guy or whatever, but people are interested. So that was a theory of like a guy who literally is probably going to be drafted in like 2% of drafts. That is interesting to me. And then Trey Sermon is the other name that I was like, just when you thought Shanahan was out, he pulled you back in, you know?
Like, 216.0 means that he's not being drafted.
Yeah.
That's not 2%. That's like, that's like zero. I guess like the argument or the thought process is Pittsburgh loves to use a bell cow no matter who it is. Sure. I mean, hey, I'm not going to say no to it. What's that depth chart look like?
I mean, no one knows.
I mean, just right? Names behind nine.
Yeah, it's literally, I think they have eight guys, which is why finding anyone would be interesting.
That's tough, because you still have Anthony McFarland, Benny Snell, Jermaine Pick-Nichols. Like, yeah, none of them are sexy.
Well, but Romeo Doubs used to be my favorite 18th round pick, but now he's gone.
Yeah, that lasted.
2-2 Atwell.
That's one I thought you were going to say. But again, those 5'7 guys that I can push over.
LaVisca Chenault, he's not 5'7. You couldn't push him over. He'd push you right over.
He's a strong boy. Yeah. But again, like I wouldn't say LaVisca's a not getting drafted kind of guy.
Dez, if we want to stick to the brand, Dez Fitzpatrick won Titans OTA player of the offseason or whatever. Apparently he was working hard. Yeah, let's take Baker. Let's get our three QBs.
And now this gets us set up for we can go running back or wide receiver.
Tyler Beatty got some mentions, you know, with this news that Gus Edwards is not going to be ready and Dobbins might also be on the pup. Damian Williams is probably the most interesting one of just like, I mean, shit. It's like, what are they like? If CPAT's a wide receiver, what do they do? They're going to turn it over to this fifth round rookie or whatever. Like,
I drafted a decent, not a decent amount, a few of Damian Williams earlier, but it sounds like CPAT's not lining up too much as a wide receiver. I think it's just going to be a kind of muddied backfield with Tyler having some role, CPAT having the higher value touches. Running back, though, in general, there's just I heard this theory earlier in the ETR Slack, is that there's a possibility that Alvin Kamara's suspension, if the Saints are out of
happens later in the year, and then Mark Ingram comes in. I gotta come clean. I was actually drafting a decent amount of Mark Ingram there for a little while.
Did you stop when they signed
David Johnson?
They signed the Rams running back. What was it? Malcolm Brown, maybe? Yeah, I think they signed.
No, Malcolm Brown is on someone else.
I think they signed Malcolm Brown. Chat, help us out here.
No, you're right. I did not, because Ingram will still get the first crack. I mean, they traded for him last year.
Like, all right.
I actually like Kenyon Drake and Rex Burkhead a lot as 18th. The Texans beats are saying that Rex Burkhead is just the starter.
I'm just throwing some in here. The Jackson was for Detroit. The Eno Benjamin for Connor.
Yeah, I think this team could probably use some early season points, so I would go Rex or
Rex it is. Yeah. This is one where a lot of times I probably would have gone, you know, just because I like getting.
I like this too. I like the Hancock too, which is, I don't think it's that popular, but I think it makes a lot of sense when you can get it with the 18th round pick.
Yeah. And Leone was converted. He was hesitant, but then he actually like dug into the numbers and ran the spreadsheets, and he was like, it doesn't actually hurt you. And if done right, it can definitely help you. And that doesn't even account for the ping pong narrative of the playoffs.
The ping pong narrative, like the season where you're playing for the 0.0001% probable outcome, where you're the only team that has, like, you're the only team in the final that got James Conner there because he missed week 16 and Eno Benjamin put up 19. And then Connor comes in and smashes the pitiful Atlanta. It's so good.
Yeah. But even forget if you're the only one, even if only 3%, 5%, because, you know, everyone has that other running back that's been smashing. Like, that's still so valuable for a GPP.
Yep. Yep.
Okay. This was fun. So this was definitely a more unique draft than I would say I normally do. So taking a look, QB, went with that strategy as we talked about. And we kind of, if you think, like, we mapped this out around pick 10th or 11th round. We were like, hey, if we're not grabbing a QB soon, like, we should wait for that Tennessee Carolina. And that's exactly what happened. Running back, Swift, Connor, great value. Pollard, Singletary with the upside. Burkhead, I like this call by you, but like, hey, just get some early season points. Because that's when maybe Pollard, Singletary should still have to roll. But yeah.
Singletary, I think, is just straight up undervalued.
Yeah, that's fair. What do you think about our wide receivers? This is probably our weakest spot.
I love your quarterbacks, love your running backs, good tight end. I'm a little worried about your wide receivers. So we go with DJ Moore as our first guy. I really like DJ Moore. But then pretty much immediately we get into questions where it's like, well, when is Godwin going to be ready? Now I think we got hashtag great value on Treylon Burks compared to where he's going to be going 2 weeks from now. I think Burks is going to end up being a 6th round pick, probably, maybe a little bit early if he scores a touchdown in preseason. I really like Rondale. I feel very good about him as a 4th wide receiver. I think you feel less confident. Whereas I don't really like Dotson, but I don't mind getting some exposure to a guy I don't like that much. And then I think we did a good job papering over the cracks with these two vet picks,
yeah.
Landry and Shark. They're just like, give me a couple 12-point games while we're waiting for Godwin to get back, then some more ceiling with Rondale. By the way, every Wandale blurb makes him sound like Walter Payton at this point. Like, these guys watching Wandale at practice in New York are like all over him, which I actually expect. Wandale's going to look great in practice because he is a hard worker. And guys like that tend to excel in practice and maybe not do so great in real games. But we'll see what happens there. And then feel very good about the tight end. I mean, just anytime you can take Kelce, it's like guy might be the number one most valuable player in fantasy this year.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll keep going. But, you know, we got chat just calling us donks. 100% minus EV. I don't even know what 100% minus EV is. Other than
it means you can never make money. It means literally in a million simulations, this team is never making money.
It means drafting Eno Benjamin literally would have made this team just disappear and it's gone. Lando, well, I've been talking a lot. We can talk a little more about, but there's a strong reason. I'd also check out Leone's analysis on this, but there's a lot of reason to be handcuffing, but if you don't want to, that's okay.
So I think we should be clear. Taking Aaron Jones and AJ Dillon, bad. Ezekiel Elliott and Tony Pollard, bad. Devin Singletary and James Cook, I don't actually think is good. I mean, I would be more willing to be open to that argument, but I have not done that yet myself. But when you are setting yourself up in a 480 person GPP, in the circumstance that we just outlined, where James Conner misses the first two games of the playoffs, Eno Benjamin grinds us out 14 points those 2 weeks or whatever, and we're the only team with James Conner in the end. It's like not only do the numbers back it up, but very intuitively, it just makes total sense.
Right, and I think it's even more so like, okay, James Conner getting drafted at the end of the third round. If he ends up being like the RB2 or 3 in the season, no one would be that shocked. It would just be like, hey, he kept the same role, had a great touchdowns, and was healthy. So now you have him with a great advance rate. Maybe 30 to 40% of teams are advancing the playoffs with James Conner. You get him two great games in the 2 weeks of the playoffs, but at the end of that second game, he gets hurt. That's where, okay, what's the situation now? Well, all those teams that have been advancing the finals have James Conner. If you said no handcuff strategy, well, then you don't have Eno Benjamin, and most people don't have Eno Benjamin. So now if Eno Benjamin is a 3 to 5%, not even that, because he's not getting drafted. If he's the 2 to 3% scenario, and he now goes off for 25, 30 points in that playoffs, and you have him at extremely low ownership, that's so valuable. And that's what we're playing for that week 17. Hopefully that helped explain it a little. I know, Davis, you did it very well as well. There's just lots of scenarios that this can play out.
And we're really drafting for contingent value in such an extreme way anyways, that like interdependent contingent values on the same team make a lot of sense.
Yeah. And yeah, you don't even know if Eno is the backup. Exactly.
That's why you can get him in the 18th round. If we knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that Eno was the second running back in Arizona, he'd be a 12th round pick.
Right. And the key is he's not getting drafted in like 80 to 90. I think it's like 90 plus percent of leagues. And so Darrell Williams is. And so now if you have the Darrell Williams, you're actually losing out on some of the value if Darrell Williams is the one. So instead, give me the chance that Eno is, which, yeah, we don't know, but I'm willing to lean into that uncertainty. And that's my number one thing for this summer has always been lean into the uncertainty. It's working with Treylon Burks. It worked with Julio. It's going to work with some of these running backs and players that aren't being drafted. Just got to have the mental fortitude to accept that sometimes it's going to go to zero.
Yeah. That's great advice for drafting in best ball. It's just like, accept some of the decisions you're making are not going to work out and are in fact minus 100% expected value. That's fine.
I love it. All right. Well, this has been fun. All right. One last. I just started this yesterday. And so we're going to keep doing it Mondays at 1 p.m. on Twitter. Join us on Spaces. We had a couple hundred people there yesterday. Overzet hosted it with me yesterday. I'll mix it in. Maybe Davis, if you want to join a Spaces sometime in the future too, we're going to rotate through. It's far more casual, just kind of chatting through what's going on and stuff. And then you have so many things going on. Where can people find you? What should they keep an ear out for over the next few weeks?
Well, I'm going to try and churn out a bunch of content before I leave. Cause there'll be a week lull where there will not be anything for me. I won't be working. I will probably be drafting when I get married and leave the country. But, we got the Takecast, we got, the Sports Grid Fantasy Football podcast. And then I'm on TV every day from, 10 Central to 11 Central on Sports Grid for Fantasy Sports Today.
I love it. And, wedding is not this, but next weekend.
Next weekend, yeah, we're getting down to it.
I'll be in Canton. I'll be at the Fantasy Football Expo, and we will definitely be cheersing a drink to you from further away.
Beautiful, beautiful. Draft a handcuff best ball team in my honor.
I will indeed. That's fantastic. Okay, Davis, this is great. Thank you so much for joining us. Chat, you were fantastic. Thanks for joining this fun stream. Up next, I will see you all in 2 days. It's Thursday. See you all later.